EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen calls for a massive surge on defense.
We need a massive surge in defense without any question.
Will it be enough? There's some types of weapons that Europe can provide, but a lot of the more advanced capabilities do still come from the United States. And Ukraine is dependent on things like Starlink, which is a U.S. Company, as well as U.S. provided intelligence, targeting assistance.
Today is Monday, February 3rd, and this is The Issue from VOA.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
We want lasting peace, but lasting peace can only be built on strength. And strength begins with strengthening ourselves.
EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said she would inform member states on Tuesday about plans to strengthen the European defense industry and the EU's military capabilities.
Also on Monday,
Russia is the aggressor.
Yeah.
Zelensky is a war leader whose country has been invaded.
Yeah.
We should all be supporting him,
yeah,
and not fawning over Putin.
Yeah.
British Prime Minister Keir Starmer speaking in Parliament. European countries, led by Britain and France, are rallying around Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and trying to hatch a peace plan that includes Kyiv.
Completely. We know Putin's ambitions. We know that he's not a man to keep his word. We absolutely have to guard against those risks, which is why security guarantees have to go in relation to any deal that must be done. And we must be vigilant on all fronts in relation to Putin.
Starmer said they needed to increase defense spending, not just for Ukraine, but for themselves as well.
We must be vigilant on all fronts in relation to Putin because, as we know from our history, instability in Europe inevitably washes up on our shores. This is about our national security just as much as it's about the sovereignty of Ukraine.
Other European nations also have pledged to increase defense spending in recent months. And at the White House on Monday, U.S. National Security Advisor Mike Waltz reacted to the news.
We welcome the Europeans taking a lead in European security. I mean, that's been an underpinning. They have to invest in the capability to do that. They're certainly shown a will, and they, both Starmer and Macron, showed that will last week.
You know, Scott, President Zelensky has been insisting that any kind of ceasefire has to have explicit security guarantees from the West. And he was quoted on Sunday as saying that the end of the war is very, very far away.
Yeah, on Monday, President Trump reacted to that, saying on his Truth Social, this is the worst statement that could have been made by Zelensky, and America will not put up with it for much longer.
Let's get some analysis on these latest developments. Joining us now is Jennifer Kavanaugh, Senior Fellow and Director of Military Analysis with Defense Priorities.
Thank you so much for being able to take the time and explain all this to us.
Well, thanks for having me.
So let's start at the top. Ursula von der Leyen has said that she is calling a meeting to present the case to the other EU members to significantly ramp up military spending. What do we know about that?
Well, we don't know much yet about the plan. There have been indications from several European states that in the wake of events over the past couple of weeks and signals from the Trump administration, that European leaders are planning some kind of increase in their defense commitments over the coming years. But we don't know how much, we don't know over what time frame, and we don't know really what the distribution between national level spending and EU level spending is going to be yet. So there's a lot of uncertainty, and we'll have to wait until Thursday, I guess, to see what the actual plans are.
And apparently this is somewhat of an emergency summit. Europeans are very concerned, obviously, about what will happen with Ukraine and how that will impact their own security. What sorts of economic and political hurdles will they have to overcome in order to be able to actually successfully, potentially go it alone as far as their defense and also defending Ukraine?
Well, the hurdles are pretty significant. there have been several emergency summits over the past few weeks, ever since the Trump administration officials were in Europe, both before and during the Munich Security Conference. And they have yet to amount to very much, however. We've seen lots of meetings, but no really new promises. Still the same sorts of talking points. Promises of increased defense spending, some talk of potentially putting troops on the ground in Ukraine, but calling for a U.S. backstop. So there still seems to be a disconnect between European leaders, what they want and what they're promising, and what the United States is expecting. In terms of the specific hurdles, really they vary by country, which is part of the problem. There really is no unified European position on a path forward. In each individual country, there are limits on how much debt they can assume. There are political groups at the domestic level that are resistant to increasing defense spending because more defense spending means less spending on something else. And that usually means social welfare programs that European states have become very dependent on. At the EU level, there's another set of hurdles to overcome, and that is the resistance to having any sort of centralized spending mechanisms to allocate money towards defense. So you really have a two tiers of economic and political hurdles to overcome, which is part of the reason why past efforts to fund defense spending at the EU level have fallen short.
Well, the United States hasn't completely disengaged at this point. And, you know, Stürmer was holding a commons today and said several times that he didn't think the U.S. was going to back out of the deal in terms of being part of NATO, of supporting Ukraine, and that it was up to them to make the case as to why the U.S. needed to stay engaged. Do you think that's accurate assessment?
I think there are two separate issues here. The first is the U.S. role going forward in Ukraine, and the second is the U.S. Broader security role in Europe and in NATO. I don't think there's been any indication from the Trump administration that they intend to disengage from NATO. There have been some discussions that they want European partners to do more, that the United States is no longer willing over the long term to be the primary security guarantor of the European continent, which would mean a burden shifting within NATO. But that's different than saying the United States would disengage. So that's one set of issues. And I think Stürmer is right that the United States remains committed to its transatlantic partners and to the broader relationship. On the issue of Ukraine specifically, I think there's a lot of uncertainty still. I think the Trump administration still would prefer to have some sort of arrangement here that leads to the end of the war, and that leads to Europe taking on most of the burden for arming Ukraine in the long term. But as of Friday, you know, Trump and his team were still committed to supporting Ukraine in that path. I think where there's a potential disconnect, though, and potentially an obstacle to continued U.S. engagement in peace process is this issue of U.S. security guarantees. The Trump administration has been clear that it is unwilling to put U.S. forces on the ground or to commit to a U.S. backstop of a European guarantor force. But the points that we saw coming out of the meeting over the weekend seem to still rely on that U.S. backstop. So that, to me, is a real sticking point. I think continued focus on U.S. security guarantees is something that could drive the United States away from the negotiating table and lead them to disengage, which is exactly the outcome that Europe doesn't want. So really, it is up to Europe, but it's up to Europe to come up with options that don't include U.S. security guarantees for Ukraine.
Right, and it definitely also appears that Europeans are working to continue to have good relations with the U.S. in spite of trying to step up their own, security and defense spending. But so what are the stakes here?
Well, I mean, for Ukraine, the stakes are very high. Ukraine can't really survive for very long without continued U.S. military and logistical support. Within a couple of months, I think they would be forced to go to Russia and settle on their own if the United States disengaged completely. And that's even with European support. So for Ukraine, the stakes are very high. Now, the political leaders in Ukraine may decide that that's better than a forced deal that they view as a surrender. But that's a choice that they have to make. For Europe, the stakes are also very high, but not quite as high. Although there's a lot of talk about Ukraine's future being existential for Europe's security, Europe hasn't acted that way for the past 3 years. If the war in Ukraine was really existential for Europe's security, you would expect to see all of Europe responding as the Baltic states and Poland have, with increasing defense spending up to, 4 or 5% of GDP, really trying to rebuild their defense industrial base, building their armies and other defense capabilities. And you haven't seen that from the rest of Europe. However, over the long term, Europe does have to decide what it's going to do. I think continued intransigence and inability to actually make progress on not just promises of defense spending, but actual evidence of that defense spending and a willingness to take over leadership responsibilities in Europe's security, not just doing small amounts to appease the Trump administration, will be necessary if they want to keep this transatlantic security relationship within NATO over the longer term.
If the U.S. disengages on Ukraine and they say no more anything, we're not giving them any more money, we're not sending any more weapons unless they're paid for, can Europe, you don't think Europe can sustain Ukraine by itself?
Well, it's not just the weapons that we're talking about. I mean, there's some types of weapons that Europe can provide, but a lot of the more advanced capabilities do still come from the United States. And Ukraine is dependent on things like Starlink, which is a U.S. Company, as well as U.S.-provided intelligence and targeting assistance and other types of logistical support that Europe at this point cannot provide. And that is a gap in European security, but it's also something that makes Ukraine uniquely dependent on the United States. Now, there are some things that there are some ways that workarounds that might help to extend the resilience and ability of Ukraine to keep fighting. But that's not going to be indefinite. There will be a time limit on that. At some point, Ukraine may find that it's better to find some kind of settlement than to try to continue to limp along.
And with Europe potentially talking about taking over peace talks with Ukraine, ultimately, wouldn't the U.S. be needed in order to complete that actual end to the war?
Well, it depends what end to the war means. There is another option here that doesn't involve security guarantees from anyone, which is sort of an arms neutrality. In which Ukraine would give up NATO membership and become a neutral country, but then in return receive, significant security commitments of security assistance going forward that would allow it to build the defense capabilities it would need to, number one, deter Russia, and number two, protect its sovereignty without assistance. That option is much more attainable if the U.S. is providing military support, but it's not impossible. With European support, any sort of a new Russian invasion, a third Russian invasion, would not occur immediately. There would be a rest and refit period for Russia as well, which would give Europe a window to actually step up and provide those defense capabilities. But if you're talking about, a European guarantor force or any sort of other alternative. Even if the U.S. doesn't provide a formal backstop, a European force in Ukraine would be dependent, at least right now, on U.S. Intelligence and logistical support. So you're right that Europe is in a hard position right now. They can't actually take over peace talks without some kind of U.S. involvement, unless they're willing to go this arms neutrality route, which Ukraine has been resistant to thus far.
So Europe is, Great Britain is making a 3% commitment, trying to get to 5%. France says they're going to up their game. A lot of these countries are talking about now making more arms and munitions. Where is Europe in that regard? How much, how long is that going to take, and how much do they need to do to really produce the kind of armament that they need?
Well, they need to do a lot, and the time frame really depends on how much they're willing to commit. You know, the UK has indicated, Starmer indicated that they were willing to increase defense spending, but the time frame was something like by 2027. That's really too slow. So for me, the question isn't just how much they're willing to increase defense spending, but how quickly. And there are political obstacles to that, how quickly, but if they want to, but for me, the time frame is really the key. It needs to be not over 5 to 10 years, but over 2 to 3 years. Now, there are certain capabilities, like, you know, some of the more difficult and more complicated things like command and control and satellite and space technologies that are going to take 5 to 10 years. But there's a lot that they could do if they really committed the resources in the next 2 to 3 years in terms of munitions, air defense, logistical and intelligence capabilities, and a lot of the ground warfare capabilities that we've seen be in high demand in Ukraine, the defensive capabilities, artillery, ammunition, things like that. So, you know, it really depends on how much they're willing to commit. I'm not convinced yet that they're willing to commit enough to make the progress that they need in the next 2 to 3 years. Just because they've been talking about this since 2022 and even before that, and the progress we've seen is pretty minimal. But they have a long way to go. It's really, the ball's in their court. Commitments are great, but we have to actually see actual progress before we can say that be encouraged by what's happening.
Jennifer, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
That was Jennifer Kavanaugh, Senior Fellow and Director of Military Analysis with Defense Priorities.
You know, Lori, that is not an uncommon view of the situation. A lot of people believe there is no way Ukraine can hang on without U.S. support, not just weapons, but tactical intelligence, and that Europe itself can't replace what the U.S. has in that regard. And Europe is notoriously slow.
Right. And certainly from Ms. Kavanaugh's perspective, this will not be a quick fix, even if European countries can come up with some sort of defense spending agreement.
You've been listening to The Issue from The Voice of America.
Thank you so much for joining us.
You can get news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our website, voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
We'll talk to you soon.